It is Monday, July 20th. Following up on the administrative shifts we tracked over the weekend, the executive branch is doubling down on its new operating model. We have a lot to cover today, from the fallout in the tech sector to the end of the World Cup. Let's get into it. The Trump administration is fundamentally shifting how federal agencies operate, moving away from established norms toward a model of executive mandate. We are seeing this in election oversight, where the administration is replacing officials and threatening state-level actors with legal consequences. This creates a feedback loop where the White House can preemptively delegitimize any election result that doesn't go its way. It is a hell of a way to run a democracy, which, honestly, is the point. They are insulating the executive branch from any real accountability by turning the electoral process into something they control directly. The same pattern is holding steady with agencies like Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE. Despite internal investigations into civilian deaths during vehicle stops, the agency is continuing these aggressive tactics. It is clear that the administration values these agencies as tools for fear and control, rather than operational entities bound by ethics or the law. They are essentially shielding federal agents from the consequences of their own conduct, which sets a dangerous precedent for how the state is allowed to treat its own citizens. The administration's approach to foreign policy is also drifting into some truly volatile territory. There are reports of a potential threat to strike civilian infrastructure in Iran, including power plants and bridges. If they actually go through with that, it would likely be classified as a war crime. It would almost certainly isolate the United States from our NATO allies and invite retaliatory coalitions. You have to wonder what the hell the endgame is here. Unless the goal is a perpetual state of conflict that happens to benefit the administration's associates through war-related government contracts. Then there is the new proposal for mandatory annual testosterone testing for military personnel over the age of 30. The administration is framing this as a biological necessity for lethality. In reality, it is a move to codify a specific, traditionalist version of masculinity within the armed forces. It is going to alienate women in the service, and more broadly, it shows a clear intent to reshape federal institutions to fit a narrow ideological mold. These aren't just isolated policy decisions. It's a systemic effort to bypass institutional checks and balances, and we are currently waiting to see if anything in the political system can actually push back. Moving to the international stage, Northern Australia is currently hosting the biennial exercise Pitch Black. It involves 20 participating nations, and while the official line is that they are just improving interoperability, the reality is a little louder than that. Defense analysts are reading this as a direct signal to China, showcasing the combined military strength of the United States, Japan, and their regional partners. It is a tense climate, especially with the ongoing conflict between the United States and Iran. The Australian government is so concerned about supply volatility that they are keeping national fuel reserves at record highs. There is some local friction bubbling up around the Pine Gap spy base, which is a critical piece of the U.S.-Australia security alliance. Traditional owners and activists are protesting the site, but there is a bigger, long-term problem for the Pentagon here. The base was built for its remote, secure location, but that advantage is being eroded by modern satellite technology. As the benefit of physical isolation fades, the base is becoming a fixed, contentious asset. That is going to make future diplomatic and security cooperation a lot more complicated than it used to be. We are also seeing a major tightening of international law enforcement regarding online figures. Reports indicate U.S. authorities have arrested Andrew and Tristan Tate in connection with ongoing investigations, with charges including rape and sex trafficking. This is a significant move against the so-called manosphere. If the legal process moves forward, it sets a massive precedent for how Western governments can coordinate to neutralize people whose digital influence is linked to real-world criminal consequences. On the domestic political front, the Democratic Party is struggling to keep up with a fragmented media landscape. Following a series of failed campaign rollouts over the weekend, it is clear they are still relying on top-down communication models that really only reach people who are already in their bubble. The party needs to start meeting voters in non-political spaces where they form actual connections with creators. The current strategy just makes older, less tech-savvy politicians look ineffective. It also creates a transparency nightmare, because campaigns are starting to use influencers to push talking points without clear disclosures. The line between independent advocacy and paid advertising is getting blurrier by the day. The Federal Communications Commission, the FCC, is also being dragged into this mess. Following a recent series of administrative inquiries into media outlets, the agency has moved away from managing airwaves and is instead acting as a weapon against political dissent. Figures like Brendan Carr are using the agency to exert pressure on media outlets. The resulting fear of regulatory retaliation is already causing some outlets to censor themselves or soften their coverage to avoid expensive legal fights. The irony is that the FCC's authority doesn't even reach the digital platforms where most voters actually consume their news. They are suppressing critical discussion without actually solving the problem of how to regulate a modern media environment. In the world of arts and culture, Christopher Nolan's new film, The Odyssey, is pulling in big numbers, with nearly $400 million in its opening weekend. He is using some interesting production techniques, like IMAX cameras that force the actors to work in short, 3-minute takes. It creates a high-stakes environment that actually sharpens the performances. It's a good reminder that sometimes technical constraints are what drive the best creative work. Nolan is also leaning into themes of irreversible action, drawing a line between the Trojan War and his previous work on *Oppenheimer*. He seems to view his career as one long, iterative exploration of human consequence. Finally, a quick look at social trends. Naming conventions are currently acting as a major signal of social status. It is a weird feedback loop driven by Hollywood. College-educated parents are trying to signal their status by bringing back traditional, historical names, while working-class families are more likely to pick up on new trends they see on reality television. The popularity of the name Bentley after it appeared on the show 16 and *Pregnant* is a perfect example of that. It is all part of a larger paradox where parents try to make their children stand out, only to find themselves part of a massive, synchronized trend. Names are psychological anchors, and the friction between what parents intend and what society dictates is only getting more intense. OpenAI is facing what looks like a systemic collapse of its current business model. The company is dealing with high-profile personnel exits, failed product launches, and legal friction with partners like Apple. Beyond the office drama, there is a fundamental financial problem. The company relies on venture capital to subsidize massive compute costs. That strategy is struggling to turn into real, viable economics. The market is also shifting. Chinese firms like DeepSeek, pronounced DeepSeek, are offering near-frontier performance at a fraction of the cost. If OpenAI cannot monetize its tech to match its $500 billion valuation, it is likely heading toward a massive restructuring or an acquisition. The second-order effects here are pretty grim for investors. People think they are diversifying by buying into utilities, real estate, and industrials, but those sectors are just proxies for AI infrastructure demand. We aren't seeing a broadening market. We are seeing a dangerous concentration around one single, fragile factor. Meanwhile, the software industry is moving away from those big, general-purpose models. Businesses are realizing that off-the-shelf intelligence is too expensive at production scale. Instead, they are shifting towards specialized, proprietary models. By managing their own model weights, companies can control costs and performance. This creates a new competitive landscape for software developers. If you just build a wrapper around someone else's API, you are vulnerable to service outages and margin compression. The new goal is to own the intelligence layer of your product. We are likely to see the rise of routing layers, automated systems that decompose tasks and send them to the most efficient model, whether that is a cheap, small model for busy work or a massive, expensive one for complex reasoning. Basically, the era of one-size-fits-all AI is hitting a wall. Companies that treat their AI as a customizable, proprietary asset are going to win. Everyone else is just burning cash on utility bills they cannot control. Beat. We are also seeing what happens when a company goes all in on this stuff. Replit, pronounced Replit, a software development platform, has transitioned to a self-driving model. They integrated AI across their internal systems like GitHub, Slack, and Notion, and they claim their engineering output nearly tripled. The key here is that they stopped using AI as a chatbot and started using it as a system for loop engineering. AI agents are now executing, validating, and iterating on tasks with real-time feedback. It changed the human role from a doer to a director. They saved 30% of human review time by using agents as core reviewers for code. But before you go thinking this is a plug-and-play solution, it is not. The bottleneck didn't disappear, it just changed. You need massive systems integration to make this work. If you don't have a semantic layer over your data, your agents are just guessing. Replit also found that top-down mandates for this stuff usually fail. They had better luck with a pull model, where other departments saw the agents working in public Slack channels and asked to get in on the action. Finally, there is the growing trust deficit. The public is increasingly viewing AI as an elite project that ignores labor displacement and environmental costs, like the massive energy demand for data centers. The industry has made this worse by framing AI as a catastrophic force, similar to nuclear weapons, while simultaneously asking for government support. It is a hell of a thing to try to have it both ways. You can't tell the public that your product might destroy the world and then act surprised when they demand heavy regulation. The industry is currently operating on the assumption that necessity will override sentiment. The argument is that AI will eventually become so essential, like nuclear energy, that people will stop caring about the politics. But if organizations keep prioritizing shareholder value over social alignment, they are going to face a regulatory backlash that could actually stifle the infrastructure build-out they need to survive. The bottom line is that AI is not just a tech problem anymore. It is a political one. Organizations that treat their operations as exempt from social obligations are going to hit a wall. Trust isn't going to be fixed by a PR campaign. It is going to require age-gating content, objective oversight, and honestly, a real conversation about how this stuff impacts the actual labor force. The corporate drama at OpenAI is exhausting, but it is a nice palate cleanser to look at something with a clear winner and loser. The World Cup final has concluded. Final match results are currently being verified by independent sports desks, but reports indicate the tournament has reached its conclusion. It was arguably the most important tournament in the sport's history. The result marks a definitive passing of the torch from the era of Lionel Messi to a new generation led by Lamine Yamal, a pronounced Lamine Yamal. This tournament officially brought global soccer culture to the United States. But, as it turns out, hosting a mega event on American soil comes with a massive amount of operational and commercial friction. For starters, let's talk about the logistics. The event hit a wall when it tried to balance high-level political attendance with the needs of fans and the press. Security protocols for government officials were so intense that media members were stuck in lines for over 90 minutes. That is a hell of a tax to pay just to do your job. When you combine global soccer's tradition of political VIPs With the rigid security environment of American stadiums, the experience for everyone else just falls apart. The takeaway: future organizers might need to shift to decentralized, multi-city models. Spreading the load could help ease the logistical burden that nearly broke the system at individual sites. Economically, the tournament was a win. It proved the United States has the existing infrastructure to act as a recurring host. The 11 host cities demonstrated that the country can comfortably handle the load and could even host larger, future iterations of the tournament on its own. The halftime show, however, was a bit of a dud. It didn't reach the cultural heights of the Super Bowl, mostly because the artists lacked the kind of creative autonomy we usually see in the NFL model. FIFA needs to figure out if it wants a spectacle or just a performance. Then there is the Lamine Yamal factor. Adidas is already positioning him to capture a massive U.S. audience. The marketing machine is betting that American fans are ready to embrace his brand of athleticism and the kind of bold personality that made Conor McGregor a household name. If this plays out, we are looking at a future where Yamal rivals LeBron James in global reach. Look, it's not for nothing that the industry is trying to turn soccer into a permanent fixture in the American commercial ecosystem. They want a new focal point for international marketing to replace the Messi-Ronaldo era. Whether that happens depends on two things. First, whether Yamal can actually sustain this trajectory. Second, whether organizers can stop treating fans and media like secondary concerns in the face of security requirements. It's a classic case of a global giant hitting the reality of American bureaucracy. They got the tournament done, but they left a lot of friction behind in the process. Sports are all about the physical, which is a perfect segue into how we actually use our own brains. It turns out, we have more control over our cognitive function than we think. Neuroplasticity is not about growing new brain cells. It is the process of refining synaptic connections based on your environment. According to recent reports on cognitive growth, the best way to trigger this chain is through activities that demand both physical and mental focus. Think dancing or learning a complex skill. These activities work better than brain training games because they push you past your current limits. That frustration you feel when you mess up. That is the sound of your brain actually working. You also need to balance states of flow and clutch. Flow is the effortless use of mastered skills. Clutch is the intense, effortful focus on difficult tasks. You need both. If you want to support this, physical exercise is your best tool. Aerobic work helps maintain gray matter, while resistance training supports executive function by increasing the circulation of molecules like BDNF. That's brain-derived neurotrophic factor, and IGF-1. That's insulin-like growth factor. Then there is the trap of self-optimization. Treating your life like a project, constantly tracking metrics and managing problems, actually kills your ability to feel joy. Joy is a surprise, not a habit. It is an intense spark that often shows up in unexpected or difficult moments, which means you cannot schedule it. When you try to force joy through rigid routines, you build a fragile, lonely version of yourself that falls apart the second life gets messy. To fix this, the recommendation is to embrace a beginner identity. Choose curiosity over the comfort of being an expert. Stop viewing your life as a series of chores to be completed and start seeing challenges as adventures. If you are constantly trying to optimize everything, you are just waiting for a failure that will eventually ruin your day. Pick one high-impact goal. Accept the temporary discomfort of being a novice, and stop trying to perfect your own existence. If you are finally ready to stop optimizing your life to death, here are a few other things you should know to start your week. A few other things worth knowing today. The AT protocol, pronounced AT protocol, is trying to decouple data from the apps we use. It moves user identity to a decentralized layer, which means your content actually stays yours instead of being locked into one specific platform. It is a nice theory, assuming the rest of the internet decides to stop acting like a walled garden. institutional investors are being told to ditch their static, checklist-based portfolios. The play now is dynamic frameworks that focus on what a portfolio actually needs to survive, rather than just what the manager wants. It is a fancy way of saying they should stop letting their own biases and bad habits drive the bus. Purpose-built platforms are beating out horizontal software in complex industries. By integrating everything from payroll to inventory into one single system, these companies are building actual moats that are hard to cross. It turns out that doing one difficult thing well is better than doing 10 mediocre things at once. If you are budgeting with a partner, try basing your spending on the lower earner's historical income. It creates a conservative floor that keeps you from relying on credit when things get tight. It is a boring, unsexy way to avoid the kind of financial resentment that ruins perfectly good relationships. That is the news for today. Try not to overthink your goals this week. See you tomorrow.